Welcome to Driven Radio Show, your home for car talk covering the latest news to the greatest views on the biggest names in performance, sports, and just plain cool driving machines. Let's rev up the conversation. Time for Driven Radio Show.
Hey, all you gearheads and car fiends, welcome to Driven Radio Show, your weekly automotive happy hour. I am Brett Hatfield, here with my co-host and engineer extraordinaire, Mr. Mark Groves.
That's me.
And we are coming to you from Driven Radio Studios. So quickly, before we get to our most esteemed guests.
Oh, very steamy.
We need a Dodge Custom 880 update. What's going on with your 64
Mopar? The 64 Dodge Custom 880. I called Daryl Ossipik of Ossipik Automotive in Mission, Kansas.
Yeah, well, I threatened that we would go ahead and continue promoting him since he's so understaffed. So 5920 Merriam Drive in Merriam, Kansas. I think that's 66203, folks. Phone number 913-831-3613. Ha ha, Daryl.
You know, it's funny. I told him that we pimped him real hard when I first talked about taking it over there. And he's like, oh, is that why my phones weren't ringing all week? And
yeah.
You are a dry, funny SOB.
Yeah, I told him yesterday that we've been giving out his address and his phone number, and he just looked at me and said, why?
It's on the bathroom wall. I get all the business I need.
Yeah, why?
The Dodge, you got it up on the lift, and what's fun is that the brakes are looking pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, they may have locked up and been hell to get it off the trailer, but the... apparently they were done not all that long ago, and you know the car has been somewhat cared for.
Like I said, I was there yesterday, and he said the brakes on the front look fairly new.
Yeah, you know, it's got a little seepage, and probably because it sat for a long time, not being driven. But other than that, he's probably going to replace one or two parts, and then you know drain it and make sure that the brakes are working, and then go get into the engine and see why it's choking to death.
I'm guessing if you get a real basic tune-up on that thing, it probably runs 100% better.
There's no doubt in my head. And it looks like, now, he'll tell me if I'm wrong. He's not afraid of that.
No, you got to remember Daryl's motto, we'll fix it no matter what it costs.
Yeah, and like he told me, you know, hey, that's all right, just drop a blank check in the front seat and send it my way.
That's right.
Thanks, Daryl. But it looks like it has this little screw-out part, I don't know what you call it, that goes into the gas tank. So you can screw that out and drain your tank. Oh. And not many tanks. I did read about that they
made them.
The
tank has a drain plug?
Yeah.
That's odd.
And from what I saw up there, I believe that one has one.
Okay.
So I'm excited to have him, you know, drain out that nasty varnish.
Good. Get all the gummy stuff out of there and then put some good gas in it. Hey, don't forget that Hy-Vee gas stations here in town, and also Casey's, most of the Casey's.
Casey's, yeah, just down the street from me.
They all have ethanol-free premium gas.
They have real gas.
Yeah. So you can run that through. I mean, granted, it's not leaded, but it'll keep from putting ethanol in there, which is supposed to be pretty bad for carburetors.
Well, the funny thing is the people that I bought it from, I've got two bottles of lead additive.
Oh.
They came along with it.
Wow, so. You can still buy that?
I guess. In Iowa? Hell okay. Yeah.
Well,
we got corn that makes lead.
We may have to have occasional road trips.
We can turn corn into anything. It's Iowa.
Oh, one road trip that you and I are going to make, and it's for the revival of our sister podcast, Road Muscle Radio, which is coming back real soon. Mark and I are going to go to the Museum of American Speed in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I was just there for an American Society of Appraisers annual meeting. We're going to talk to Dave Kinney about that in just a minute coming up. But, Mark, you've got to see it. And we drive through a corner of Iowa to get there. So
golden.
Absolutely. Okay, quick Schadenfreude Express update, and I'll really try to bite my tongue on this. son of a bitch.
Beach.
The same complaint that I've had with the car all along is still very valid. It's that they don't make the parts for it anymore. So when things go wrong, 9 times out of 10, they're obsolete and you got to go hunt them down. And when you hunt them down, they're used and they may work and they may not. And people who say they're refurbished may be full of crap. And they have been twice on the PSE pumps that I've ordered, and both of them gotten in, that run about $400 each. That's been fun. Fortunately, the first guy refunded me without no question. The second guy won't respond.
He's ghosted you.
Yeah, he absolutely has. I have to see if I can get eBay involved with that crap. And then you get one part that works and it reveals another one that doesn't.
Yeah, it starts to show the flaws.
Or since I've been driving the car a little bit and enjoying the things that do work, I mean, it still runs great.
Yeah.
And it's fast and it's smooth and it's quiet and it does lots of things really well. And one of the more kick-ass parts of the car is it's got the best factory sound system I've ever heard. And I've been listening to it, not at high volume, but I've been listening to it.
Yeah.
And then the other day I got in, and one of the things that makes it so great is it's got 4 subs in it.
Oh, my God.
And amplifiers to drive them. And the other day I got in, and the sub in the driver's side door said, and it doesn't work anymore.
Daffy,
so the rest of the stereo sounds very nice, except for that one part. So now I got to go hunt down an amplifier and maybe a door speaker. And of course, nobody makes them anymore. And so, you know,
Pioneer still makes stereos, and Jensen makes speakers.
On and on.
I believe in you.
I'm real slow to replace with the aftermarket because it is so very good when it works. It's just getting it all
J.C. Whitney's your friend.
Crap. J.C. Whitney doesn't have anything for this entire stinking car. So, you know, one step forward, 2 steps back. Yeah. Feels like I've been doing that a lot. And, the steps forward, just when you think you're making progress,
yeah,
something else kicks you.
No, you are not.
No, you're not.
That's not good.
I promise you, there's a room full of Mercedes engineers who are just giggling themselves blue.
Look at him. He's on the internet again, trying to order the parts. This is funny.
Tells them we have it and then tells them we don't.
Refund is funny.
That's another one I ran into. MB Parts Express. I ordered a new climate control unit from them. They said they had it. I paid for it. They sent me, we'll send you shipping information. And then 2 days later, they send me an email. Oh, by the way, that's obsolete. We don't really have it. It's not on the shelves. We canceled your order. Here's your money back.
Son of a... Your shipping information is your ship out of luck.
Yeah, well, I about shit my pants. So that's kind of the way that's been going. But there is an upside to this. And like I was talking about right before we started the show, it's made me appreciate just how easy and accessible the Corvettes are. I used to think Pine and Parts for those was a bear. It is not. It is so simple.
I love my Corvettes.
And I'm sure there are other cars out there that are way worse than this. But I think the idea you had right before we came on was the right idea. We need to start a company that 3D prints obsolete parts.
Yeah, I keep thinking about that. And you might be able to get around like some of the trademarky stuff by... Just printing it and not putting the holes all the way through, and that way
or not putting like a Mercedes 3-pointed star.
Oh yeah, you think there's not going to be any branding? Sorry,
I'm quite sure they would have they would take issue with that. But anyway, we're not smart enough, and we don't have the funds enough to be able to start that business.
And I am far too lazy.
But somebody out there, why doesn't Elon Musk have a bigger old car, Jones?
Yeah. What the hell?
He'd be the guy, man. He'd be the guy.
Elon, buddy.
All righty. Our special guests this week are Dave Kinney and Greg Ingold of the Haggerty Price Guide. Woo-hoo! Dave Kinney is a lifelong automobile enthusiast, collector, owner of automotive valuation firm U.S. Appraisal, contributor to the Haggerty Insider, publisher of the Haggerty Price Guide, and he serves on the McPherson College Auto Restoration Program Advisory Board. Greg Ingold is an avid car enthusiast, a member of the Haggerty Valuation Team since 2014. 10 years! Greg, you've done 10 years. That's pretty cool.
That's right.
Contributor to Haggerty Media, as well as Haggerty Insider, and editor of the Haggerty Price Guide. Greg and Dave, welcome back to Driven Radio.
Great to hear from you. Good talking with you. By the way, anything, by the way, that... has been around since 1964, Mark, is going to have a little leakage. Just saying.
Yeah. Present company included.
Including Mark. Yeah. Especially Mark.
Same age as my car. I planned that out.
Guys, it's time for our quarterly update of the Hagerty Price Guide. We get to find out what's hot, what's not, and what you should be looking for, selling, and holding on to. When we last spoke, it was all the way back in the tail end of October. We haven't had a chance to get together since then. And since the Hagerty bull market list for 2024 has come out, Mecum had record sales in Kissimmee. Barrett Jackson had strong sales in Scottsdale. Amelia Island took place for the first time without RM auctions present. And RM had their first event, March event in Miami. So, what has the effect been on the collector car world? Is the market up, down, mixed? Give us a lowdown, guys.
Yes, it is. It's up and down and it's mixed. So thank you very much for having us.
I really appreciate it. Nice talking to you again. Let's talk in July.
Greg, you want to start off?
Yeah, I mean, looking at January, that was quite a month, wasn't it? More cars than we've ever seen and bigger sales than we've ever seen. But, when you really dig down into the nitty gritty, there are some cars that still did quite well, but, we talked last about the market kind of slowing down a little bit. And we're seeing a little bit more of that effect. I mean, I would not say that the market is in a full-on recession, but some of that sanity creeping back into buying and selling habits that we talked about before, that's kind of the same old story. What do you think, Dave?
Well, we got some ups and downs. It's certainly not any time to panic. A lot of the stuff seems to make sense. We've talked about now the dichotomy between the number one and number two, the best cars in the world, and the number three and the number four cars. And it seems that, people are even more and doubling down on this. They're even more going for the better cars and leaving the lesser cars behind. That is a buying opportunity if you're somebody who has the time and the inclination and the will and the skills to fix up a car, because when the threes and fours get cheaper, if you have a three plus car that you can make into a two or a two minus car, it's a pretty good time to put the sweat equity into it. Unless, of course, it's an 80s or a 90s Mercedes where parts are just really kind of expensive. Am I right, Brett?
Not a clue what you're talking about.
But you know what I'm saying. There's actually opportunities when markets change a little bit, and we have seen that. But we have some exciting cars that have non-expected cars that have gone up quite a bit in value. And starting that is the 53 through 58 Studebaker Commander wagons.
Wow,
44%, guys. 44%. So they went from 6,000 to 8,400, but it's up a big percentage, and that shows that the market for wagons is growing across the board. So it's not just those kind of later model Mercedes and BMW wagons that people seem to talk about all the time, but also even going back to older wagons. Kind of an interesting change in the marketplace where people are buying more classic wagons. That started, 20 years ago when wagons first kind of made their appearance on some of the price charts as growing fast. So it's continuing the trend. But I thought that was fun because nobody ever thinks about 53 through 58 Studebakers as leading much of anything.
Only by volume.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they have very dedicated and very very passionate owners, so they'll be happy to hear that.
Do you think that's because the threshold for ownership is fairly inexpensive relative to other classic cars, or maybe because some of the entry-level collectors have little kids on the ground and it makes it so that they can haul all the stuff that goes with the kids?
It could be a combination of both. I think it's probably more the first than the second. It's just interest in wagons. And believe it or not, there's a lot of availability on Studebaker parts. And they're not just from used Studebakers and, you know, parts cars. There's quite a bit of stuff out there. Apparently, Studebaker owners have the hoarding gene, and that hoarding doesn't just doesn't count for the 19 Studebakers in the backyard. It also counts for the fact that they would go places and buy brand new parts and keep them on the shelf for when they needed them. And there's a lot of those people who are sadly going to that Studebaker graveyard in the sky. And so a lot of those parts have come out of the woodwork as well. But there's also a few active companies, Studebaker International, I'll give a shout out to, that keeps the flame alive and is actually making parts for old Studebakers. So, you know, who knows? Maybe part of it is because of the parts availability as well.
Well, I'm looking at a 1953 Studebaker Commander wagon right now, and it looks like it should be filled with old Avon bottles. It smell of scotch and white shoulders.
Oh, so, you know.
Desperation. It's
kind of painfully sexy. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
I got really exciting news for the Studebaker collectors out there, because the Studebaker Museum in South Bend, Indiana, is quite recently and very actively restoring the Muppet Mobile. So the car of your childhood dreams is coming back to life. So
the natural habitat for a bear.
Exactly. So you can make your own rainbow connection about that. So
it's
all good. It's all good.
I'm kind of curious, what was the result of RM moving to Miami and having their first event down there?
Well, I don't want to get too political. Okay. So I'm going to just say this. It was not a good idea to have two major events on the same weekend.
Yeah.
And, if you look at the 2024 calendar, you'll see that they are now on weekends next to each other, which makes a lot of sense, because if you're old and rich and you go to Florida, you have two things to do, one at the bottom of Florida or close there to Miami, and one at the top of Florida. And it actually is right at the top of Florida in Jacksonville. So, you know, you can get in that, you know, Schadenfreude car of your own, the late model Mercedes, and possibly drive all the way from one to the other end of Florida, and be there in plenty of time for, you know, to get between the two auctions.
That thing's going to be mint by next year.
Yeah, don't stop believing.
That was rude and funny.
It really was.
It's a journey, right? What can I say?
It's a journey.
I believe you may have texted that to me at one time or another, sir.
I believe I did.
I'm curious, in your opinion, did it have an adverse effect on Amelia Island Car Week?
I don't think it did on Amelia. You know, there are different events, and, you know, in fairness, one is you know, Amelia is kind of the old standard, and the Amelia is a really nice event. I did not go to Moto Miami. I'm hoping I can go next year, because now, you know, we have the freedom to go to both instead of just fly between them. Like about a dozen people I knew actually did that. They would fly, you know, out on Saturday to go to Moto Miami and then back Saturday night, which is kind of crazy. Unless you have your own private plane, of which a few of those people did.
Oh, yeah.
But anyhow, it's a different kind of show. They're a little bit different. And, you know, it's the hobby. And we should promote the hobby. And everybody should have a chance to go to as many things as they want to. I'm sure that next year's Moto Miami will be spectacular as well, as will next year's Amelia. So it's all good.
I can't agree with you more. So one of the things that's shown strong growth have been the 53 Studebakers. What else had popped up in the last, since the last time we talked, what else has had a strong showing?
Greg, well, go ahead.
I'll take that one. So kind of a love of mine that I don't talk about when it comes to cars is mid-70s GM A-bodies. And the 73 through 77 Monte Carlos did extremely well.
They no kidding.
By 24% this past book.
Wow. That's impressive.
Right? Well, you know, I think that these cars have been just, they've been way too cheap for way too long. I mean, remember the days when you could pick up a really nice one for under 10 grand, and it wasn't really all that long ago. But we've seen a number of these mid-70s, mid-size GMs come to market, and they're selling really well. I mean, another car that didn't quite pique our interest quite as much because they're a little bit rarer, but the mid-70s Pontiac Grand Ams did incredibly well. We've in the past seen the Cutlasses and the Le Mans do really well. So I believe that it is finally time for the mid-70s full-size and mid-size Malaise era cars.
Now, the 8-bodies could be had up until, I think, 74 with a big block. Did they also have the rotating bucket seats like you could get in the 73, 74 Colonnade Chevelles and Lagunas, or was that not available?
That I don't know for a fact, but I do know that, I mean, I've seen enough of the standard market cars with the swivel buckets that, I mean, I would think anything's possible. I would hope that it's possible because I love those swivel buckets.
Well, all those.
My dad has a 75 Laguna S3 with swivel buckets.
Yeah, very cool. The 73 to 77 Monte Carlos, when you were in them, that hood was a block long. That was the biggest stinking hood. And
yeah, your headlights were shining on the future. It's a big
hood. Well, actually, those hill beams weren't shining on much, but
no,
compared to 2024. But yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that the Monte Carlo always struck me, and I know this is heresy, but it was Chevy's answer, and I don't mean that it was at the same price point, to the Lincoln Mark III. It was a personal luxury car, and it was marketed as a personal luxury car. So it was supposed to be a step up above the Chevelle, kind of a more mature car than a Chevelle. But of course, underneath, many of the components were precisely the same. Mm-hmm. And, they were, you know, just a little bit of a step up. And the styling is definitely the slab sided look that was very, very popular back then, and they made them into custom clouds. And kids, if you don't know what horrible is, look up custom cloud. You'll see a fake Rolls Royce made on a Chevy Monte Carlo.
Oh God!
I don't think those were nearly so bad as the Eldorado with the front end pimp kit and the giant giant headlight covers.
This is where we have to agree to disagree, because I think that is the epitome of class in 1970s cars. And I love my urban entrepreneurial vehicles. Some others call them automobiles. I love them. I always wanted to be Mr. Big. I want Mr. Big's Cadillac. A Corvette made into Eldorado, a Corvorado.
Yeah.
It is truly one of my unrequited loves of all time.
Dave's worn out three VHS copies of Live and Let Die, just looking for the Cadillacs that are in that.
You know, I had a buddy a friend in junior high who went through puberty when he was like six. So he was. He was driving his mom and dad's 74. He had a 74 Monte Carlo, black on black. Thing looked kick ass. And in junior high, he would do burnouts early morning and then, you know, drive away real fast, go park it somewhere and walk back to school, because he was like 14 when he was driving it. But he had a mustache and the long hair. He looked like a hippie of the day, except he was way underage. But that was a kicking car. It looked great. Envied him, of course.
You just described my middle school years, by the way. Thank you very much.
Oh, hell, that was you.
Yeah, exactly.
Back when I went by Brad.
I'm so glad you two could relate. So those are a couple of good examples of things that have come on strong. What really ate at this since the last price?
We got a couple more. I mean, you know.
Oh, well, feel free.
Yeah. In the German wheelhouse, because we love our German cars.
Oh, we do.
Parts availability and how cheap everything is. The 85, 86 Audi Sport Quattro.
Really?
30%. Yeah, those are the
shorter wheelbase. Yeah, yeah.
And gorgeous cars. Rare when new, rarer now, because, they got wrecked and rusted. But a lot of car for the money, but they're hundreds of thousands of dollars, right, Greg?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and...
They're what?
Cool half mil used to be kind of the going rate for a good one, and that just went up. RM Sotheby's had a very nice example in Phoenix that sold extremely well, and we've been waiting for a comparable for one of these for a long, long time, and it just knocked it out of the parks. And you know, it's one of those things where when you have so few cars made and so few opportunities for comps, you got to jump on it. And even then, the car sold so well that it was almost outlier territory. But you know, when the market moves, you gotta call it.
I know that this isn't, you know, visual for everybody, but I want you to know that when I'm wearing my white ski outfit and you know, having my my après ski boots on afterwards, I take my hair and I flip it over my ear and I say, "We call it the Urquator."
You know, uh-huh. Isn't that thing just a Scirocco with air conditioning?
No.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness.
No? Wow.
No. It's a Golf with air
conditioning. Oh, you're right. My bad.
No, it's not. Actually, they were great rally cars and great performance cars for the era. I remember a friend of mine who ran a repair shop had two of them in there all the time. You know, for tuning and for whatever, but they were dramatically different cars back in the 80s. And keep in mind, this was the era of the unintended acceleration, 4,000 or 5,000 series garbage. Audi. So, they were brutalized in the marketplace.
Yeah.
You could probably pick one of these things up for pennies on the dollar now, but those days are long gone. Another one, 84-89 Subaru XTs up 25%.
Wow. Really?
Yeah,
the XTs, the super Dorwedge.
They're a little bit more than free now, but they're creeping up.
Yeah, I understand there is one without rust. We haven't confirmed that yet, but it's somewhere on top of a mountain in Arizona, from what we heard. But it might have a little sun damage, but it's not rusty. So
can you?
And it's pre head gasket issue, so you'll be fine there.
Ouch!
Now, for all those who don't recall the Subaru XT, that's the super wedgy. Looks a little like a doorstop with wheels.
Yeah, well, you just described about half the cars from the 80s that were interesting. So.
Hey.
all the GMF bodies and everything else. All righty. So what is in decline? What ate it in the last, we haven't talked since October. This has been a long time.
Yeah. There's two big ones. I'll start out with the less severe one, and that would be the Superbirds took a decent hit, 25% ish for the six barrel and the Hemis. However, if you're paying attention to Kissimmee and to Scottsdale, there were a lot of those on the market, a lot of really, really good examples. And I think that too much of a good thing ends up being a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the auction world, that's called blockage when too many come on the market at the same time. You know, it's a different type of blockage that you and I have talked about, Brett. But the interesting thing is that too many of the same car coming on the market at the same time can cause a lot of problems. And maybe that's part of it, that, you know, there's 10 buyers and 14 cars. That's not good. I'm making those numbers up. But so that the people who didn't think they were going to buy one going to the auction might have wound up with one because it was, you know, a quarter less than they were planning on spending. So I don't know if that's a trend. We can't call it a trend line yet, but it is something to watch out for. Also, near and dear to Brett's heart, 67 Corvette L88.
Ooh, yeah.
Down 18%.
Yeah. The yellow car that went at Mecum Glendale in March of 2021 came up again this March, and I noticed that it did not sell for quite what it did the first time around.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm not calling these trends, but they are kind of muscle cars from the 60s, 70s. You know, that's some of the things we're seeing. So,
well, and there was a pairing in Kissimmee of build. It's the first and last L88 built, and the pair sold for what previously a good single 67 L88 went goes for. So yeah, it's,
it was a seven figure sale, but it wasn't a long way into the seven figures. And I was I was surprised that the pair of them went so inexpensively.
I definitely not calling it a fast decline, but it's something that we're paying very close attention to. Again, you know, two L88s might constitute auction blockage just with how rare they are.
Well, I was thinking with the yellow car, the yellow 67 coupe that went at Mecum, it'd be tough to find a more direct comp than that.
Yeah. You mean market example, right? Going into our next.
Oh yes, pardon me, sir.
Yeah. another interesting couple that are down are 63 to 68 Maserati Sebring. That includes the Sebring 1 and the Sebring 2 for all of us Sebring fans out there. Down 15%. That could be that we got ahead of the prices at the Hagerty Price Guide. We did see some great sales, and now we're seeing some really good sales. We had to adjust those downward. And then the 68 to 78 Lamborghini Espada. The Espada is an acquired taste. I love Espadas. They're you know, whacked looking cars. They're very, very flat. But Lamborghinis of that era have generally gone up and up and up and up, and we're seeing 15% down on those right now.
Wow. The Espada is an interesting looking car. It is a Lamborghini with a pretty decent sized back seat that a full size human being might be able to get into.
Yeah.
And again, it is kind of an acquired taste, but I thought all things Lamborghini were heading north.
Yeah, either that or heading to an accident leaving Cars and Coffee, one of the two. But it's kind of a surprise, but I think this is an adjustment that'll stick for a while. But, you know, it also, you know, when we see ups and downs, we have to temper it always, because sometimes, you know, there's nobody out there for these number three and number four cars. And that really hurts hurts the marketplace. I don't think that was necessarily it, but we did see quite a few come on the market that didn't do too well. The last of our downers, 87 to 98 Alfa Romeo 164, there are a lot of people who would say, I don't care. That was the last of the 73rd time that Alfa entered the market and left before it came back again. I kid, I'm exaggerating, but they're down 15%. But I think with the 87, 98 Alfa Romeo 164s, they were a good car for their time. It's just that their time has kind of elapsed, and now they're more interesting than sought after. How's that?
Yeah.
Nice.
What do you think people should be hanging on to right now?
Gold? Silver? Their wife? I mean, you know, your girlfriend? That'd be good.
Ammo.
The interesting cars that I'm seeing are some of the late model stuff. I haven't been able to kind of get this off the ground, but some of the late model stuff, including SUVs that are going to be coming on strong. Now, when I say late model, I mean 2000, 2006, 2007. I would think that if I were in the market for a really nice Lincoln Navigator, now might be the time to buy it. Believe it or not, people are getting interested in those old land yachts. So like they were interested in the sedan versions of them before.
I bought a Lincoln Navigator with 12,000 miles on it on Bring a Trailer a couple years ago and didn't pay a whole heck of a lot of money for it. And I Luke Channel and I have had this conversation. I think Ford found its sweet spot with trucks and SUVs between 1997 and 2003. And those first generation Navigators, especially if you can find them with the Intech engine with a 32 valve, 300 horse Intech, they run forever. The reason I bought the one on Bring a Trailer is because the one I had before that has almost 300,000 miles on it and still has the original engine and transmission.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot to be said for some of those kind of bulletproof American cars that, you know, from that era. And I think there's more. I'm just I'm starting to investigate a few that I'm looking at. And with Jaguar leaving the car business and becoming exclusively, there's no more sports cars, SUVs. Maybe it's time to look at some of the late model Jaguars that are out there. Their reputation is not one of zero service, let's put it that way, but there's some beautiful, some painfully beautiful Jaguars out there in the marketplace right now that are quite affordable.
Greg, what do you think folks should keep their hands on for the time being?
I think for the time being, and I know this isn't really a much of a new answer, but I think that anything that is kind of mid-tier 90s, early 2000s, Japanese and sporty is a really solid hang on to right now. It's we are definitely seeing a shift in market interests. And as each year goes by, we are seeing more and more people my age, a little older, a little younger, getting into the market. And that seems to be exactly where the lean is. I think part of it's affordability. I think part of it is just sort of that that's what was in the parking lot when I was in high school, but the rich kid had it. I think that's really, if you're going to hang on to a car for the next 5 years, that's where I would be looking at, whether it's anything along the lines of Subaru WRX or Mitsubishi Evo. Those are a little bit underappreciated right now, but anything under $50,000 sporty and Japanese, I'd consider hanging on to it, because if history is going to repeat itself, like some of the hot Civics and Integras from the 90s, I might do okay.
What do you think, gentlemen, what do you think that people should consider selling or letting go right now?
I always say the same thing, cars you aren't using, but I think it's probably also time to reevaluate some of the four-door 60s cars and 50s cars. If you're not using them, now's the time to get rid of them. I don't think there's a lot of future in many of them in terms of increasing value. But if you love it, if you're having fun with it, go ahead and keep it. It's just that it's not going to appreciate like it had been.
What would you advise people to turn loose of, Greg?
I mean, for me, I'm kind of in the same boat as Dave. Like if you're not using it, maybe it's time to reassess your priorities. But I would say anything that you're not using that has no to low miles on it right now, that's original and old. It seems that despite the market maybe changing a little bit, those cars are doing exceptionally well. And if all you're doing is throwing mothballs at it and checking the battery tender once a year and you're not driving it, I think now's the time to get rid of it.
So if you're not using it, broom it.
Yeah. Yeah, use that money and buy something that you're actually going to enjoy, because that's why we own cars, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Since we talked last, the Hagerty bull market list for 2024 came out. Let's talk about what was on it and why it's there. What do you think, guys?
The interesting cars to me are the Jaguar XKR, the 2000-2005, something that I was just bringing up. I'm not a big fan of the 2011-2016 Ferrari FF, but I realize I'm in the minority there. People really like it. It came after the car I have, a 612 Scaglietti, and the styling is just not my cup of tea. Some of the cars, though, that we're seeing some movement on, one of them includes the Countach 21st anniversary Lamborghini, whereas the Espada is not doing all that well. The Countaches are really coming into their own. BMW M3s on the list, Chevrolet Impala SS 65 to 70, always a good choice. 81, 86 Jeep CJ8 Scrambler.
Oh yeah.
Everybody wants one of those, it seems. 6466 Thunderbird, which is actually two different generations of the bird. You've got the the square birds, basically the square styling. I'm wrong. It was 63 I was thinking of, was the last of the jet birds. And my personal favorite here, the car that everybody loved to hate, the 97 to 2002 Plymouth Prowler. Mm-hmm. They're a hell of a lot of money, a hell of a lot of car for the money. You can buy really decent ones in the 30s. And when you think about it, that's what they came out at in the 30s, I believe, is what they were. And, you know, 97 to 2002, there's been a little tiny touch of inflation since then. And you can buy them for kind of the same money. They write checks that they can't cash. They're not a V8 car. So there is a little bit of that. But, you know, who the hell needs it? It's a cruiser, and it's a fun cruiser. Get one with the get one in purple and get one with the trailer. You'd be completely ridiculous that way.
There's one in there you didn't touch on, and I'm a little curious about the 46 to 50 Chrysler Town and Country.
Would not have been my pick. I'm seeing something different. I'm seeing that, you know, these cars have been kind of going down in value, but maybe somebody at the bull market side knows more than I do. But we've recently had quite a few of these. Well, when I say quite a few, three of them for appraisals in the last, let's call it 6 months. And all three of them were cars we looked at before, and all three of them, the value's gone down.
Oh,
didn't the Town and Country have a gasoline powered heater?
I believe the pre-46 did.
Okay.
But I don't remember. Sure. What the hell's wrong with that? I mean, you know, what possibly could go wrong? What are you trying to say here?
Not a thing. Not a darn thing.
There you go. And when it leaks, you know, if it leaks on the upside as opposed to the downside where it falls out on your feet, all you get are gasoline fumes. And, you know, what could be wrong with that?
Yeah. Just happy as you can be, motoring along, sucking in gas fumes.
That's what those wing vents are for. That way it shoves it right back, you know, past you onto the kids in the back seat. Let them learn a little.
That'll shut them up.
Yeah.
The other one on the list is the 97-99 Mitsubishi Pajero Evolution, which was never imported to the United States from what I remember. Is that right, Greg?
Yes, that was a Japanese market only. The reason why we care about this is it was actually the homologation model for the Dakar Rally.
Oh, really? And now that they're 25 years old, importing them is not a problem.
Right. Correct. Yeah. So you say you want an Evolution.
Wow, man, that's a long way to go.
Ooh, that just cleared my sinuses.
Okay, guys, what changes have you had in your personal collections? Have you gotten anything new and fun? And what are you hunting? What do you not have that you'd like to have?
See, I don't want to tell you what I'm hunting because then somebody's going to go and buy the one I want. Why should I tell you that I'm looking for a early Series 1 SSK Excalibur? I mean, I don't want people to know that.
I could probably trade Mercedes parts and get one of those.
You could. But then again, you could probably trade Mercedes parts and buy your sanity back, too.
I'm not sure that's going to happen. Greg, how about you? What have you had any changes in your collection? Anything new and fun, or is there something you're looking for?
You know, my one car garage says enough's enough. So it's just the Civic and the two bikes for me at the moment, and that's probably where it's going to stay until I make more room. But if I was going to stretch my budget a little bit and get into a car that might go up a little bit in value, still looks cool and be kind of fun, S15 Silvia is where I would stake my bets right now.
Ooh,
just in portable. That's the model to have. You know, turbocharged 4. Rear wheel drive, you can get a decent one for $30,000-ish with a turbo. I'd say it's not a bad buy right now.
Well, and the other problem that you're starting to have that I've been watching, you've been hanging out with Kyle Smith too much and he's turning you into a dirt bike guy.
Yes, I've become a Honda XR hoarder. I've got a 200 and a 650 right now.
Oh, you got a 650. I like those.
I have a I have a 93 650L with oh, cool. about 5,500 miles on it.
Do you still have all the lights on it? Is it still legal or taggable, or have you turned it into a full dirt bike?
It is. It's completely street legal. It looks about as stock as it comes. Like, it hasn't been fiddled with very much. If I'm going to do off-road riding, I might, I would consider maybe a 600R or a 650R or something with a little bit more compression, a little bit more horsepower. Because honestly, like, riding the 650 is like driving a mid-70s 454. It's got a lot of grunt, but once you get it past like 2 RPMs, it has no power.
not lots with the throttle. Dave, you and I are fresh back from the annual American Society of Appraisers Auto Specialties Group meeting at the Museum of American Speed in Lincoln, Nebraska. Before we discuss appraisers and appraising, can you tell us a little bit about the museum?
Yeah, it's a hidden treasure. Lincoln, Nebraska is probably not on everybody's radar screen as a place to go to learn more about automobiles, but it's a fantastic museum. We did a tour of it, as you remember, that took 3 hours to do a, kind of a walkthrough. That's how big it is. It's surprisingly well-equipped and beautifully done museum. Three complete levels. I think it's, what did they say, like 36,000 square feet per level, something along those lines. So you're talking 100,000 square feet of cars and car stuff. Heavy emphasis on race cars and speed. But there's just great, just great exhibitions everywhere you turn. You really, any gearhead could spend an entire day and a half there without any problem at all. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, easily. The engine displays were fantastic. One of the comments that I made to Mark when I got back is the mounts that they made for the engine were almost as pretty as the engines themselves. Mm-hmm. The museum is absolutely fantastic, and they've got a great display of streamliners, of Bonneville Salt Flat cars and cars that were used for top speed records, and dragsters, and just lots and lots of cool stuff. Had a pretty good collection of motorcycles. You're not lying. You're not wrong about any of it. It's a huge museum, and it's very, very well done. And there's fantastic stuff there. And I can't wait to take Mark up there and mm-hmm. show it to him.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, it's next to Speedy Bill's Speedway Motors, where you can go and after you're done, you can go buy a set of tires at a good price or whatever you need for your hot rod, your driver, your collector car, whatever. And the other thing to emphasize is the people there are extraordinarily nice and extraordinarily knowledgeable and are there to help you out. They're so welcoming to us as a group. And we appreciate it. This is the second time we've been there, and I'm sure it won't be our last time. Nice. And like I said, Lincoln is not exactly on the way for anybody in our group. It's not too terribly far for you, Brett, but it's a full day commitment to get there and get back by air for a lot of people, because you might fly into another city and drive there. But it is just a really, really, really nice place to visit.
It's I would consider it one of the highlights of Lincoln. Period.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that and going to see The Price is Right live was personal highlight. That's completely other story. Completely different story.
All right, Dave, can you tell us about the ASA and what makes the American Society of Appraisers different from other appraiser groups?
Well, I'm a big fan. I've been a member of ASA since the early 1990s. I'm an appraiser. That's what I do for a living. And I'm also the publisher of the Hegarty Price Guide. One led to the other. My appraisal skills led to basically deciding to put together the price guide. So I'm forever grateful for my ASA membership, American Society of Appraisers. It's different because it's a very serious organization. This is not some situation where, two guys get together and they decide they want to form an appraisal group or something like that. And that's okay when people want to do that, but we're accredited members. We have to take tests. We have to have continuing education, and we are all dedicated. I think, Brett, this is your first time with the group. You would think that a group of guys getting together like that, there'd be lots of wild stories. There'd be lots of drinking. Well, there's both of those things, but the drinking was after hours, and the wild stories were all about automobiles and nothing else. It's not a party organization whatsoever. It's quite serious because this is how we make our living for a lot of us. And I'm a big fan. There are three major appraisal societies in the United States. First is AAA. They're out of New York. They're basically New York focused. They have one member who does automotive. ISA, which is International Society of Appraisers. I'm not sure how many people they have that are full-time automotive. ASA has the largest group, and we meet independently every year. We have about 25 members. We hope each time to get in the high teens for the attendance of our conference we do once a year. And this year we made it into the teens without any problem. And next year, I believe we're having it on the East Coast here where ASA's headquarters is outside of Washington, D.C. But I encourage anybody who is serious about it and doesn't want to just do it as a job but wants a career to look into it.
Why are appraisers important, and what should people be looking for in an appraiser?
Boy, you got a couple hours. The why are appraisers important is that, I guess basically most everybody knows what the value of their car is. You can pretend that you don't know, but you're going to kind of get it. You know, if it's a $30,000 car, you're going to get it between 25 and 35 most of the time. But for people who aren't in the car world, and for people who are making loans against cars, and for people who are, entering into a business partnership and they want to put that into, part of the partnership, or if the partnership owns that, you should have somebody who can define and give their opinion on what the value is. And that's why an appraiser comes in handy. Now, a lot of times I do court work. And so not just for divorce, but also for, and also for much bigger reasons like taxes. And, when people donate a car, they should get a qualified appraiser from a qualified appraiser. ASA people are accredited. We don't call it, everybody uses the term certified, but that has been used way too much. And so I could certify you as a certified, car geek, and all of a sudden that's what you are. But we're accredited and we're tested, and we do our best to try and keep those people happy and out of the court system if they're not playing fast and loose. And if they are playing fast and loose, they generally aren't our customers or our clients. That's part of it, but there's a lot more to it. We help solve problems of valuation by being that independent voice who says, what their opinion of the value is. Courts are the only ones who determine value. We give our opinions of value, but we can back it up with what we used to call comps. And what do we call them now, Brad?
Marketplace examples.
Oh, good. He was listening. I like it.
I even wrote it down.
Wow. Yeah, you get a gold star.
And when we get together, we learn a lot. I mean, I would be surprised if you didn't write down 15 new terms when you were there, or, a couple of new websites to go to that you didn't know about. And it's an educational organization, and we have a saying from our founder, the late Dean Furman, in our group. He said that what blesses one blesses all. And I think the same is true about education. So it's an interesting group. The old joke is that there's 4,500 members of the American Society of Appraisers. So I like to say 4,500 members, 9,500 opinions, because we are big on opinions. But it's a really interesting group of people. And I enjoy it. I've been, like I said, I've been a member since the early 90s. That's a long, long time.
What should people look for in an appraiser, aside from ASA membership?
I say accreditation something other than a self-accrediting organization. That's why I mentioned AAA, ISA, and ASA. They're the three big ones, and they're the most serious of the personal property appraisal organizations. I would look for credentials. It's really funny because a lot of times people say, well, what do you know about a 1966 Corvette? And of course, you can answer that by saying, I own a 66 Corvette, but that's not what you need to know. You can learn the information about what's different, on different cars and what the options are and everything else. You should have an independent voice who is interested in providing the valuation answer that you're, it might not be the one you want, but the one that you need or the one that you're looking for.
So finally, what does it take to become an ASA accredited appraiser? And this I think the reason I ask you this question is because it will show everybody the legitimacy of what we do.
Well, we have four courses that are mandatory that you take. That's Personal Property 201, 202, 203, and 204. There's an ethics exam that is not a very important thing, but also Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, known as USPAP, which is mandatory for us to have as well. We have to have continuing education hours, and most importantly, to become a senior member, you need 10,000 hours of appraisal or appraisal-related experience. To become a member, a candidate member, doesn't take any membership experience because that's what you grow. And then to become the second tier, which is accredited member, takes about 5,000 hours of appraisal experience. Now, it's important to note that we do have other, other requirements to join. A college degree or equivalent is needed, and a couple other things. This is an investment in your future. If you want to just, if you were looking for a retirement job, if you're my age and say, I want to go look at cars, ASA probably isn't for you because it requires a big investment in time and a pretty substantial investment in money to go through all these courses. I'm very, very happy I did. I'm here and I'm happy to tell you that there would be no Hegarty Price Guide in the way it is if it weren't for my background with ASA. Number one, it gave me the skill set, but number two, it also gave me the confidence to go forward with the project. And I started the Hegarty Price Guide as something called Cars That Matter, and I started it independent of Hegarty, and then we merged with Hegarty in 2011. And I'm very, very proud of what we've done and how we've done it.
That's everything I wanted you to tell the whole world about what you've invited me to do and what I'm investing my time in now. So thank you.
And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure you're a failure. So I mean, successful. I meant successful.
I would expect no less.
we're a very welcoming organization. I think you'd agree with that, we try very, very hard to share as much as we can in terms of knowledge with each other. It's also a good group because when somebody says, hey, I've got a car I need somebody to look at and value in Lenexa, Kansas, I will say, hey, I know a guy who lives in Colorado. As simple as this, that most all of my referrals are to fellow ASA members. So and I get referrals from ASA members as well. I'm working with a project with another ASA member right now. Like in real time. And that's because we cooperate. We don't try and, cut each other off at the knees. We try and work together as much as we can.
Thank you for that, Dave. I appreciate it. We have been speaking with Dave Kenny and Greg Ingold of the Hegarty Price Guide. Gentlemen, please tell us where we can find each of you online and on social media.
Well, you can find me. I'm Dave Kenny on Facebook, and I'm also on Instagram as DH Kenny. And of course you can always get to us through the Hegarty website. If you send a question, any of the valuation team, somebody on the team can handle it, or it might just come to me or to Greg.
Greg?
Well, and like Dave, I'm on Facebook. I'm Instagram, Greg Ingold, both places, pretty easy to find. Other places you can look for me is Hegarty Media. I'm pretty regular contributor, so if you're interested in what's going on in the market, myself and my very talented colleagues at Hegarty Insider are always putting up new content to let you know where the market's at.
Greg, Dave, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Always good to have Dave and Greg on. Just like we talked about at the end of the interview, they make it easy. I don't have to work too hard on these.
And it's interesting the changes in the market right now. Even with my let's call it my research.
Yes.
My pornography on Facebook Marketplace. I am watching prices on cars that are other cars that I really like fall.
Yeah.
And it's good. I'm sorry for the people that are selling it, but it is kind of good to see because it got ridic.
Well, they said the split is between number one and number two cars, which are really the best of the best that are out there.
Yeah.
Versus number three and number four cars, which are very much the rest of them. And, you know, even as nice as I try to keep all my stuff, most of my stuff's number three cars.
Yeah.
You know, three plus, but, you know, the ones and twos are the very best, and they should draw the premium dollars. But for the rest of us, you know, you like having a pretty nice driver. That's a number three car. And seeing prices come down a little bit sure makes it easier to be in the hobby.
Plus, I know that if I actually bought something that was really super nice and the paint was perfect, blah, blah, blah.
You wouldn't want
to
drive it.
I wouldn't drive it. Yeah. I'd be afraid to drive it. I know it would be a disappointment. That first time I got a door ding in a parking lot, I'd be pissed out of my mind. So, you know, even though I'm a bottom feeder when it comes to vehicles, I want one that I can just enjoy rolling around in and not have to worry about too many rock chips and this and that.
You know, that was the difference between the 61 Impala and the 63 Impala.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The 61 Vlad was so nice.
Spotless.
And so pretty and so clean. And that was the one that everywhere I took it, I was super paranoid about the car. And the 63, screw it. Put the top down, go park it anywhere, just have a good time with it. And I really enjoyed the 63 a lot more than I enjoyed the 61.
That was a sweet ride down the old Moray River Run.
Yeah, it was.
That was a nice ride.
Put the top down, throw her in gear, let's go.
Yeah, going down 35, you know, 65, 70 miles an hour, top down. It was like, yeah. Check it out, what's up?
And the whole time I was in the 61, I was always paranoid about everything.
Yeah.
You know, don't get a rock chip on it. I'll be real honest with you, that 65 that's in the garage upstairs, it's got the paint on it is not even a year old. There's a little tiny rock chip on the front.
No. Oh.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. I drive that car.
It's meant to be driven.
I drive that car, and it is super clean, and it is numbers matching, and it is great looking, and I drive the wheels off of it, and it's not a garage queen, and I don't want it to be.
Yeah.
And even as good as it looks, I still drive it and enjoy it, and I would rather have it that way than not.
Nice. Well, you know you're going to be that way. You're going to be puckered when you finally get the Schadenfreude Express all up and running.
Oh, you
you're
know.
You're going to be, no, don't break it. Nothing can be replaced.
That thing's got a ton of little tiny rock chips all over the front of it. There will be some paint on that before everything's said and done. And maybe even a wrap.
Oh, yeah. Do a wrap, but do one of those iridescent ones where every angle is a different color. Sexy. Let's donk out some wheels on it. Make it happy. With a sound system like that, come on.
I already picked out a color that I want to do on it called Black Opal. And it's a super dark blue, black, metallic. And it changes a little bit with the light.
Oh,
and
how fun.
It was a stock color in 96, 97, 98, 99, but you see so few of them. And you never, ever, ever see one that has a tan interior. And mine's got that, you know, that two-tone lighter and darker tan that's in it. And all of those that I've ever seen always had a black and gray. So I think it would be cool to do it on that car because you never see that combo ever.
Nice.
So kind of cool, and I wouldn't worry about chipping the damn paint.
It'd
be nice to have something on that car I didn't worry about.
There is that.
I got to tell you, as much as I gripe about it, I've still been driving it, and it runs so well.
Yeah.
And it is.
And 12-cylinder.
Yeah, it has... It just pulls and pulls and pulls and pulls and pulls, and you can't believe how fast it is. And it really is a remarkable car. If it wasn't, you know, if this was a 74 Chevelle, the Colonnades Lagunas, I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't fool with it.
Yeah.
I'd just leave it alone. But it's not. It is a special car, and it is worth the trouble and effort. It's just a little frustrating. When I get it all done, I'm sure all of this will fade with time.
Oh, yeah. You'll be happy as a clam.
It's that or I'll be medicated. You know, it's one of the two. I'll be in a facility somewhere. Car drive me nuts. Thank you so much for spending time with Driven Radio. We love what we do, and we wouldn't be able to do it without the support of our listeners. You can find us online at DrivenRadioShow.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Driven Radio Show, and on LinkedIn as Driven Radio Show Podcast. We've been talking about this lately. I'm going to keep saying it because the numbers are coming up, and we thank you for that.
Yay, thank
we
you.
Have discovered that the download numbers that we are provided from our podcast provider represent a small fraction of the actual listens that the show gets, and that streaming listens are not included in that count at all. Furthermore, iTunes doesn't report jack. They don't tell anybody what's going on. So if you are listening, do us a favor. Please download the show so we know how many people are out there and how many people are hearing what we have to say. If you have a story and you'd like to tell it, or you have somebody you would like us to interview, contact me at Brett@DrivenRadioShow.com. I am Brett Hatfield from Markel Groves.
Yup.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on Driven Radio.